I still remember writing that email and pressing send, and that email went off to my bosses, and I just had that terrible sick feeling that you get when you've sent an email and you know that you can't undo it. All of us really want to be wanted. We want to feel valued. We want our skills to be valued, and it really feels personal. But the truth is that in workplaces, we're all replaceable. We are all expendable. And that's a pretty tough reality for any of us to face, I think.
Hello there, I'm Scott Spark. This episode of Work Life, why you should probably leave your job. Or consider it, at least. Recently, I met Ginger Gorman. She used to work at the ABC in Canberra and, you know, we'd never met before, but she very kindly offered to talk about leaving a job she loved. And I have to say, she was so honest about it. And it's been quite a surprising experience for her. She's learned a lot, and I'm really looking forward to sharing her story with you. But first, Paddy McCord. She would hate for me to say that she was in charge of hiring and firing at Netflix, because officially her job title was Chief Talent Officer. However you look at it though, from 1998 to 2012, Paddy McCord built and shaped Netflix, from its days of renting out DVDs via the US Postal Service to being a global producer and provider of streaming movies and TV series. And if you wanted to work and remain at Netflix, you had to impress Paddy McCord. She's now a consultant to tech and e-commerce companies around the world, and here's what she thinks about the concept of having a job for life.
I think it's a promise that we make to each other that we intend to keep, but it's just not true. It's just been part of the myth of working that if you find the right place and the right company, they're going to take care of you for the rest of your life. And that's just not how business works. Even the nonprofit sector, I mean, the world doesn't work where promises are kept for life. Especially maybe we used to make those promises when we thought we'd be working 20 years. But now, you know, people could be working 40, 50 years. So that's an awful long time. Part of my perspective is that I'm in tech in the Silicon Valley and things change so much, but I realize that it's not just the technology that changes or the business that changes, we change as people. And so what our best work is when we start with a company isn't always our best work after we've been there for a while. It might be another place gives you another opportunity.
So when should you consider leaving your job?
Probably the best indicator that you should think about it is when you wake up in the morning and you don't want to go to work. And you find the conversations that you have with your friends and your family complaining about your boss or the company or the decisions that are being made or the people that you have to work with that you don't like. We spend so much time at work, we should certainly be doing it to end up coming home at night being proud of what we did in the day.
And here are some other things Paddy McCord says should make you think twice about your job.
I think when work becomes boring, when you find yourself doing things without thinking about them too hard, or you're not learning anything. You know, I think we're put on the planet to just constantly be these learning machines. And when people get bored or it gets dull, then they don't do a very good job and they don't care very much. It's not great for anybody for somebody to be bored or unhappy when they come to work. I had an engineer who was a brilliant guy. He was great. And he had joined us to help with our search engine feature. But he became really enamored with social media when Facebook first started. You know, he would passionately tell about, you know, we got to do this. We got to do Facebook. We got to do it right now. We'd made a business decision that that wasn't the right time for us to enter into the social media business. And he kept complaining about it. And finally I said, oh, please, just go to Facebook. It'll take you in a hot minute. You're brilliant. But I'd really like the person who's running search for us to really get up in the morning and want to do search. And you don't want to do that anymore.
And you know what? Looking around and seeing what else is out there for you might really pay off.
I think that you should always, always, always be thinking about what opportunities are out there for you. Because if you constantly look at other opportunities or talk to people from other companies or other businesses, then you learn a lot about yourself. When you go interview with somebody, you tell a perfect stranger what it is you love to do and that you want to do. And without that kind of practice, you don't constantly re-examine it for yourself. That's thing one. thing too is it's really important to know what you're worth in the market. And, you know, I get asked this question a lot, how do I ask for a raise? And that's kind of an old Mad Men, you guys have Mad Men, right? It's kind of an old 50s scenario that you're going to knock on your boss's door and he is going to be sitting behind his desk and he's going to decide whether or not you ask the question in the right way. And that's honestly, you know, I'm not sure it's your best technique, but a really important good technique that will hold you for the rest of your life is to know what you're worth if you left your company.
And this got me thinking, what about loyalty? Does loyalty matter in the workplace anymore?
Sure, to a degree, but here's where I think we get all canoodled up in the way we talk about these things. When you go interview for a job, you are not cheating on your partner. We didn't make a vow that we would be together for life, right? That's a family commitment. So with companies, I think that, you know, when times are tough, sometimes people, everybody needs to just row hard. But if times are tough and your company's going to hell, there's no reason to go down with the ship, right? So your first loyalty is to your own career. And you just need to, we need to all be more honest about that.
And that responsibility of knowing your worth goes both ways. Patty McCord says that if employers want their staff to stick around, they need to continually reassess whether they're paying their workers competitively.
I encourage HR people that I work with to proactively know what the market is bearing. So here's the deal. Let's say you're hiring a whole bunch of software engineers and you haven't hired them in a while. And so you go out and you start talking to people and you realize, wow, these people are making quite a bit of money. And maybe they're making more than the people that you currently have in the company. And you get that information from people that do the hiring, the people that do the recruiting. So then you can come back and go, geez, is it that we're hiring people that we couldn't have attracted before? Are we hiring people with more experience than the people that we currently have? Or the people that we currently have, are maybe they falling below market because they haven't left? And then you proactively make those changes. So while I'm at it, a change that's very important for us to make proactively is to fix pay inequality. And so we don't need government regulation to do that. We just need to look at how pay works in our companies. And if women are making less than men, we should give them raises and be done with that.
If you are kicking goals, though, and maybe you're getting recognition, but the real thing that you want is a pay rise and you're not getting it, would you say to that person, move on? Find another workplace?
I would say it's a good time to start looking. You know, I did a talk at a women's conference not too long ago. After the talk I did, this was a Q&A with a bunch of people, and this woman said to me, you know, I work really hard. I do a lot of extra projects. I really love what I do. I really love my team, but I'm certain that I'm paid less than everybody else around me. So I asked my manager about it, and he said, well, you know, this is a tenure-based system, and you just haven't been here as long as most of the other guys on the team. In fact, those senior guys, they've earned the right to not work very hard anymore. And if you wait long enough, you can have that too. And I said, wow, where do you work? And she said, I work for the government. And I said, well, at least he told you the truth. And she said, I said, now what is it that you do? And she said, I'm a data scientist. And three other people in the room offered to double her pay, sight unseen. And she said, no, but I really love my data. And I kind of held her hands and looked into her eyes. And I said, you know, the world has a lot of data in it, good data. But, you know, that was the system she had joined. Does she have other choices in the workplace? Yeah.
And it's really important, Patty says, to reward outcomes, not hard work.
The pay for performance correlation isn't always the best correlation because sometimes that just rewards hard work. And sometimes people work really hard at something and don't accomplish much. Right?
That is really hard to hear for some people, I imagine.
Yeah, sure. But again, there's two sides to the equation. They may not be clear what's important for them to accomplish, and that could be the fault of their employer. Not being clear specifically about what greatness looks like.
What's more, Patty McCord says keeping good staff, it's not just about money.
The underlying premise of the culture at Netflix was that we had high-performing people in every position. Now, understand that we were very honest about if that position would change, or the technology would change, or your skill trajectory changed, or, you know, if we needed to do something next year that you could learn how to do in 10 years, it probably wasn't going to work out for us to wait for 10 years because the opportunity would have been missed. And so if you're a high-performing employee, and you're doing what you love to do, and it's really important to the business, money's not a very good incentive.
What is a good incentive then?
Great work, tons of accomplishments, smart people all around you, changing the world, having fun.
And when it comes to the harsh reality of having to fire people, here's how Patty McCord says you should do it.
My advice to employers is start with being very clear about what you're attempting to do. Be very clear about what your goals and objectives are and what your time frames are. Be very clear about the types of people that are going to be successful in achieving those things. Be very clear when those things change. And that way, you have an open dialogue with your employees about whether or not it continues to be a good fit or not.
Mm. And I want you to show me how it's done. I want you... to sack me, Patty McCord. I have been working for you. I'm a hard worker. We have a great relationship. We like each other. I work so hard, Patty. I do like 11, 12 hours a day. You see me. I'm here before you get in. You leave, I'm still here. But I mightn't have the skills. So what do you say to me? You call me into your office.
Well, first I've called you into my office way before this conversation. Like 6 months ago, where I've said, hey, Scott, as you know, the technology around what we're doing is changing pretty rapidly. Mm. And we're going to need to be working at a scale that's 100 times bigger than what we're doing right now. And you've been with us since the beginning and you work so hard. And, you know, a lot of what you do is really manual. That's why you put in so many hours in the day.
I'm really happy to work harder, Patty. I want to work harder. I want to be here.
Right. But as you've been in those meetings sitting next to me as we've discussed how we're changing the software and we're changing the technology and we're replacing the work that you do with a different kind of work, then that time's come, my friend. And first, I want to thank you for every minute you've been here. We wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for you. And I want you to remember about all the great stuff that you've had here and all the things that you've learned and all the ways you're going to take that with you to your next fabulous job. And we're going to start talking about where that might be. And I'm going to call some of my friends and I'm going to tell them how terrific you are.
I want to be fired by you.
And you're going to say, but I don't want to go. And I'm going to say,
I don't want to go, Patty.
I know, but we can still have beers.
Can we?
Sure. I mean, I hang out with Netflix alumni all the time.
Well, maybe I'll get a higher paying job and the round will be on me.
Maybe you will. But you won't know if you don't go look.
Dear all my future bosses, if you need to sack me, please, please call Patty McCord and get her to do it. Because frankly, that felt strangely comforting. You're listening to Work Life, the series about your life at work and how to make it better. I'm Scott Spark. Some people are more likely to leave their job than others. Younger workers, for instance.
For somebody in their 20s and 30s, it's not uncommon to see an individual staying at a job for, you know, as little as 2 years before moving on to a new occupation.
Dr. Henry Su is an associate professor of economics at the University of British Columbia in Canada.
From the perspective of our work, what we were trying to understand is why it is that young people leave jobs more often than older people. And what we find is that when a young individual leaves their job, they're much more likely to switch occupations. So the conclusion that we ultimately come to in our study is that young folks have higher unemployment because it is a natural part of the career progression, that what's going on when you are unemployed as a young individual is that you're actually job hopping to find your best, what we call occupational match, or, you know, your true calling in life. What we find is that amongst young individuals, in any given year, they face a 40% chance of switching occupations. Whereas if you compare somebody in their 40s and 50s, that probability is much lower, something around 5%. So What we believe then is that young individuals are switching jobs, looking for their best fit. And for the typical worker, that occurs in their 40s and 50s. And this is a good way to think about a true calling, because what we know is that in your 40s and 50s is also when a typical worker's hourly earnings or salary peaks. And a large fraction of this wage growth occurs in the first 10, 15 years of one's career. In fact, approximately two-thirds of lifetime wage growth occurs in that time frame. And so what we're finding, and what others find as well, is that as much as, you know, half of this, 50% of the wage growth that individuals experience over the first 10 years of their life comes about due to job switching. What's happening there, what we think is happening there, is that when you were 20 years old, at least when I was 20 years old, when I first was contemplating what I'm going to do with the rest of my life, you're not quite sure what kind of work you're going to find meaningful. And there's kind of a matching process that goes on in terms of you searching for the work that is going to be best for you. And so this process just requires trial and error. And so that's how we come to the finding that much of early career wage growth is due to individuals learning about the type of work that best suits them.
So knowing this about younger workers, what's the lesson for employers?
One thing that employers can take away from this, and they probably do, is to understand that when you're hiring younger individuals, not to necessarily assume that they're going to stick around with you for their entire working lives, and you shouldn't think that they're going to be happy to be receiving pay that may not be commensurate to their productivity.
And according to Professor Phil Lewis, director of the Centre of Labour Market Research at the University of Canberra, this trend that Dr. Henry Hsu observed in the US workforce can be seen here in Australia too.
Young workers in particular tend to have relatively short job durations, and older workers tend to have rather longer. There's people who've got a certain set of skills and they've got a certain preference for jobs. So they might have a commerce degree and they'd like an office job and they like, et cetera. There are all sorts of characteristics which define a job, and there are characteristics which define the person. And when they're well matched, it means people are very happy in their jobs and they're happy with the pay they get. Unfortunately, a lot of people are mismatched. And so that's particularly the case for young people. The job market is full of people who often take a job because they see they have to have a job. And it's only through the experience of actually doing that job they find whether they're well matched, or they may just feel the current job is totally overwhelming them. And this is particularly the case for young people, because young people are just coming into the labour market and they haven't really had time to assess whether they're a good match or not. And it's the same with women as well. The reason women tend to have lower job duration is essentially because they're largely responsible for the for bringing up children. And so, you know, a job that matched them quite nicely when they were single or just got married won't be a good match for their preferences when they want to, pick the kids up from school, etc.
It wasn't parenthood that encouraged Ginger Gorman to stop producing radio for the ABC in Canberra, but leaving her job has led to a much better balance between work and family.
The times when you learn the most about yourself are the times when you're really up against the wall and you're forced into situations where you have to make hard choices. This was a big step into the unknown for me, and I have to say it was terrifying and quite devastating at the time, but it turned into something wonderful.
In 2015, Ginger Gorman faced a really tough choice. The ABC's budget was cut and so were staff.
I was put into a pool with three of my longtime friends and colleagues, and like me, they were mid-career radio producers. They were also mothers of young children who had mortgages to pay. And I looked hard at that situation and I just thought, I don't really want any of us to be ranked the lowest and booted out. And I don't want one of us to have to carry that knowledge around forever and try to find another job knowing that they or me were ranked the lowest. So I just thought, you know what? I think it's time for me to go. And the other factor was that I had once had this incredibly vibrant career, and as sometimes happens when you stay in an organisation for a long time, my career just stalled. It wasn't really going anywhere. So I thought, what an amazing way to have a financial cushion, if you like, to leap into the unknown. But having said that, I won't pretend it was easy. It was terrifying and it was crushing at that time. I think it's like when you break up with someone that you're dating and you kind of have hope that it'll work out, but in fact, it's never going to. Yes, the reality was I perhaps needed to do something different, and I guess I was pushed into taking that risk, but the risk in the end turned out in an amazing way. Like, I could not have hoped for better. It's only 12 months down the track, and I have to say it's probably one of the best things I have ever done in terms of my career.
She says that it's one thing to fantasise about leaving your job, it's another to actually do it. And taking that leap often gets you asking yourself some really vital questions.
Like, sometimes the idea of just leaving a job and walking out might be very, very tempting. You know, let's be realistic. We've all thought, I'd love to storm out and say, F you and F your job, you know. But I think people really need to take a bit of time to reflect. Am I really good at this? What am I good at? What do I love? Where do I really want to go? And that is an incredible, precious opportunity to reshape your life in a way that you want to, if you take it, if you're willing to take it.
Part of leaving the ABC meant she received career coaching, and Ginger Gorman says it's made the world of difference.
It's a process by which you reflect on your career as a whole. So you have a coach, and that person guides you through looking at your achievements, the things you're most proud of in your entire career, that is, not just your most recent role, what work you enjoy most, and what you still want to achieve. And through that process, it really focuses you on where you want to go, how to keep building your career. And for me, if I'm honest with you, it was a process by which I could scrape myself up from that real devastation of the redundancy process and then launch onto this new path with confidence. It's almost like having an honours supervisor or a PhD supervisor, where you might be a very bright and capable person and have a lot of skills, but you still need someone wiser and more experienced to look over your shoulder and just support you in those early stages of working out what you're trying to do and where you're trying to go.
The learning curve's been steep, but totally worth it, she says. Ginger Gorman is now a prolific freelance journalist pursuing her own choice of stories in a way that suits her life.
I work full-time and perhaps more sometimes, but the way that I work is not laid out like a normal working week. It's really more like a patchwork of time. So, for example, I might get up at 4 a.m. in the morning in order to make a deadline and file a story in time. And then a couple of hours later, my kids might get up, I might get them breakfast, get them ready for school and daycare, drop them off, and then I'll go back to work and pick them up in the afternoon when their school and daycare is done. And then perhaps later that evening, when they're all in bed and everything's quiet, I might go back to work. So my work and home life in that way are not really separate. It's very much integrated, and my office is a beautiful spare room. We've built a Jarrah desk. It looks out over the garden and there are parrots and things. And so, yeah, it's in the middle of our home, physically and kind of emotionally, if you like, as well. You know, my husband said to me a few months ago, you're a much nicer person since you've left the ABC. That's pretty offensive. But once I got over that, I realised that what he meant was I was less grumpy and less snappy and less stressed, because even though I'm working more hours than I worked at the ABC, I'm doing the work that I love. And I'm doing it in a way that I can still be a good mother. He later said to me that he also felt I was happier and I was doing the work that I am passionate about. And that was really part of it, that because I'm happy, I'm not an angry witch anymore.
Since walking away from her job 12 months ago and reinventing work in her life, I wonder, what's she learned about herself?
The thing I learned was to back myself. I learned a really tough lesson in backing myself, that if I do leap off that cliff, I am able to land on my feet, and I did. I think I'm less afraid.
GingerGorman.com is where you'll find her latest work. Thank you for listening to Work Life. If you've loved listening to the series, by all means, share it. For more episodes of Work Life, simply visit abc.net.au/rn. Till next time, I'm Scott Spark.